Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Welcome in to the final Six Again podcast episode in its current format. At the conclusion of this one, we will be wrapping up 3 years of the Six Again podcast, and we'll do a big thank you and everything at the end, but just giving you a heads up, we're here. We're going to wrap up the NRL Grand Final day. We're going to touch on some Rugby World Cup squad news and finalise all the reward recipients, as well as give out and announce our major winners for our footy tipping comp. So it should be a good one to finish up on. I've got a bottle of, I believe it's called Reshk, Cab Sav, my favourite winery.
That's why he's leaving. He's onto the wines now.
Oh, bloody it. No, I just went through all the beers on the weekend. yeah, I mean, it's my favourite winery in Australia, or vineyard. I don't freaking know. It's good. How are you doing, J-Rod?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad the weekend went the way it did. It's a good day for me. Newcastle won a premiership. But here we are.
Yeah, I was like, I remember last time I was trying to say as optimistic and positive as I could. And then through the day on Sunday, the amount of times I forgot that the NRL Grand Final day was on, and then went, oh, crap, the state championship. Because it was like the game I was most excited about. And it was just an absolute belting with the outs that the Devils end up having. Then I watched my two most, like, there's disliked and hated. And Newcastle and Parramatta are hated by Manly supporters for separate reasons. And, like, they're in the Grand Final. Like, oh, God, one of these teams are going to win. But I was like, I'm going to watch it because the athletes there are brilliant and they both played really well to get there and I want to watch the game. And Parramatta backed up in the NRL Grand Final. I'm like, come on, podcast, I got to watch this stuff. Let's go. Amp up. Got the kids all excited. We're here now and we've got stuff to talk about. But
went well for me. Really well. I liked it. It was good that, you know, Newcastle won. Unfortunately, like, with all respect to Parramatta, it should have been Newcastle versus Roosters. I think there would have been a better, higher quality game. Oof. But, oof. Oh, well, come on.
We did talk about Parramatta play their grand final to get to the grand final. Yeah. So it was going to be hard to repeat that effort.
On that note, we'll get to the main game in a minute, but what Penrith did in these last two, well, this last season to win...
Ridiculous.
Jersey flag.
SG.
SG ball, that's it. Reserve grade and NRL, four grades. The only thing they didn't come in on was the NRL women's, because they don't actually have a team. And they actually applied for a license a couple of days ago for the women's.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and... We've always said, you know, losing Coruscant,
Kick out.
They bought Luke Garber. They've got a young fellow, Sonny Luke. Got to see him play in the
New South Wales
Super Bowl. So it turns out he was actually captain of Isaiah Yeo and Nathan Cleary in the Holden Cup. And then he went off the rails a little bit, went to different clubs. Now he's back. He's probably going to get the 9 next year or the 14 behind Mitch Kenny. Despite all that, you know, to win four grades is just scary. They've done a lot right and a lot has to go wrong in their retention, not their recruitment, their retention at this point for them to fall off. The only negative they have right now is the fact that the team they've got, I think their average age is 24 and 6 months. The team they've got, so they're going to be around for another 6-7 years, which means the players coming through are more often not going to be lost to the other NRL clubs because they're not going to get a run, especially the halves and fullback. Is going to be, but, you know, it's going to be really interesting, their retention. But congratulations, Penrith. Despite the fact what I think of them, you can't deny how good this last year has been for them.
Yeah, it's more the off-field stuff, I think, that puts a sour taste in my mouth for them as a club in the last couple of seasons. Imagine having like a family member, like a close family member that supports them. It'd be really tough if you don't. But none of us are in that.
I do. Likely. It is tough.
Oh, yeah, your brother. What?
Tell you what, though. Tell you what, I've heard from him a lot. I have not heard from my other brother, my Parramatta supporter brother at all.
The Mutant Brothers are very good at talking a lot when they're winning. But more
I talk a lot.
Billy and Beatles. So. All right, let's talk about something we can all get behind and the real comp that finished on the weekend that we're all excited about, wanting to see what was going to happen. The Hop Nation sponsored 60N footy tipping competition. Now, we've already announced that Ben Liner was the winner of the streak competition with a run of 22 straight correct picks, which is brilliant. And we've been in touch with Benny already, and he lives close enough to our region without giving away a location. So his gear's already on the way. And that brings us to the tipping competition. Now, going into this grand final, we had two participants, Rocking Horse Road and the underscore Irk, on 170 points. Obviously, if one tip Parramatta and one tip Penrith, that had split it. And that was the only way that was going to happen. If they both tip Parramatta, they'd stay on 170 and they'd share first prize. If they both tip Penrith, they'd end up on 172 and both share first prize. They both tip Penrith. So now they're both on 172. So our count back was go back and have a look at who had the most full rounds and determine it that way. So I did that. You can export the Excel spreadsheet. I think you all can at the bottom of the footy tipping comp. So you can go back and have a look. Considering they both finished 6 points ahead of everyone else, how many full rounds do you think they got, not including the grand final or the... They got one. They both shared round 12. They got four rounds. And so did our third place winner, Spencer Blues. And how weird is this? So did Ben Liner, who won the street competition. So the four winners were the four tipsters who tipped full rounds in round 12.
What happened in round 12? Was it a hard round? I'm going to go back and look.
Well, no, having a look, there was a lot of sevens and sixes. So there might have been one game that they went a bit different on.
Manly lost to Melbourne. Fair call. 22-0. Penrith over Cowboys. Broncos smacked the Gold Coast. Wow. Newcastle beat Warriors. We won. And everyone tipped them. Good work, guys.
There we go. So
South smacked Tigers. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So what I did, once I looked back on the Excel spreadsheet, going all the way back, every round that they tipped was the same bar round 18 and round 11. Rocking Horse Road got seven on both of them. The Irk got six. So they had a 2-point lead. So Rocking Horse Road had a 2-point lead all the way up to the first week of the finals where they got one, the Irk got two. And then the prelim final, that was the killer for Rocking Horse Road to take it out by themselves. They got one, the Irk got three. So what we're going to do, boys and or girls, is I've talked to Hop Nation and we're going to combine the first and second prize together and then split it down the middle. So you're both going to kind of win first and a half prizes. If that makes sense. So the winner would have got an entire slab. So what we're going to do is by splitting it in between the two, each player is going to get three 4-packs of their selection. Each will get a pair of Hop Nation socks. Each will get a Hop Nation pot glass. Each will get a Hop Nation beanie. Each will get a Hop Nation t-shirt. You'll both receive a 6AGAIN t-shirt. You'll both receive a 6AGAIN stubby cooler as well, which is a pretty sizable merch pack. So congratulations to both players. Spencer Blues, who ended up finishing in technically third, you'll get the 6AGAIN t-shirt and a 6AGAIN stubby cooler as well. And just a huge shout out to all of you guys who made this tipping comp worthwhile and really fun. Just to give you a heads up, myself and my dad both finish on 165, 1 point behind Spencer Blues in third. So that would have been slightly awkward, but neither of us did real well through the finals and that really cost us. And Where are the rest of Ben Hunt for Dally M faded out at 160? And where's Jared here? Johns is better than Lockyer. 76. I couldn't quite work out the app. So we'll be...
Because I'm so good at it, I just figured I'd give everybody... I didn't want to win.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is.
I pick Parramatta from first game in the grand final. I'll give you that fucking right now.
So, guys or girls, get in touch with the show either through Facebook Messenger or Instagram Messenger or Twitter, or just message us straight through the ESPNFootyTips.com website. You can just click on Beaver Eater 11, which is me, and send me a message, or I'll be doing the same to you anyway. So congratulations to all our players, and thank you for taking part. Let's jump on to grand final day. So beforehand, we had the awarding of the Kennedy Cherrington and Ken Stephen medal. Sorry, the Ken Stephen and Veronica White medal, which was won by Kennedy Cherrington. And this award goes to players who are doing outstanding work in the community. And the two awards this year were taken out by the so-mentioned Kennedy Cherrington and Cody Walker. So congratulations to both of those players. So Walker was crowned ahead of other finalists, Angus Crichton, Hamasau, Taibau Fidau, and Nico Hines, where Kennedy Cherrington took her award out ahead of Millie Boyle and Steph Hancock. Kennedy Cherrington, who overcame adversity as a child with heart disease, dedicates her time giving back to charities and organisations which help overcome the heart disease, so charities such as Heart Kids and the 2 Feet in a Heartbeat Walk, where Cody Walker has shown dedication to the Nunga Māori or Dream Big program, the Aboriginal Employment program, and the Deadly Youth Mentoring program and Rabbitohs Wellbeing program. So congratulations to both of the award recipients, and just a massive thanks from both of us and the whole 60N community with the work that you are doing off the field and using your platform in the best way possible. All right. I was waiting for Jared to jump in. I think we'd have this down pat by now.
No. Adam just kind of stares at me. Look, despite what some players seem to think, they are role models, and the players who go out of their way to assist the youth in the country are, you know, that should be commended. To be honest, most of them probably don't want to be commended for it. They just do it for doing it sake. But it is good that there is some recognition out there, and just hope it just flourishes, this kind of stuff.
What was also announced on the day was the Rugby League Player Association Player Champions. So the background of this one we've covered already. This is one voted by the players, voted by their peers, and the winners were James Tedesco and Racine McGregor. So Racine McGregor taking out the double after winning the Dally M winner, kind of mind blank there. Has doubled up with the Rugby League Player Association medal is voted on by peers, and James Tedesco has taken it out for the third time. Now sits only one spot behind Jonathan Thurston, who won the award 4 times. So congratulations to both players. And this obviously means a lot to them, as it's voted on by their
peers. When does Teddy stop getting awards? Fucking hell. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but holy shit, he must have a really... like a big room at this point is full of trophies.
Yeah. I'm looking around me going, I've got a big room. Just the trophies that are missing. I've got my special ones up there.
You got rewarded for not having to get into Dally M a couple of years ago when Aaron Woods came second. You should have won
that's
it then.
That's what I should have won then. So Racine McGregor follows up Emma Tonegado last year of winners of both awards as well. And with everything else going on, people may have missed that there's been talks around to change the Dally M award name for the women's game to the Maggie Maloney Award, the star of the first official rugby league game. Although Racine McGregor also threw Ali Brigginshaw's name up as an option, so the Brigginshaw medal. So keep an eye out on that one.
Millie Boyle medal.
Cool. All righty. We're going to take our first quick break, and we are going to come back with the NRLW game result analysis before we crack into the NRL Grand Final. Alrighty, NRLW Grand Final saw Newcastle Knights and Parramatta Eels both in their second NRLW season after competing in their first earlier this year, and things not going how they wanted to. Neither made the finals, to both of them making the Grand Final. Eels with the upset win against Sydney Roosters last week due to their physically dominating performance, and Knights being in control and clinical against St. George. And it was more of the same for the Knights, who ran out 32-12 winners over a gallant, albeit outclassed, Parramatta Eels outfit, who were without, was it Penetani who was missing? Yeah. Very talented, very experienced player. 20-point difference, I'm going to say no. And Tamika Upton taking out the Karen Murphy medal for best player on ground. Jared, you would have been watching this one with a keen eye. What did you make of the game? Obviously, we know what you make of the result. 7-2, a pretty dominant performance from start to finish, despite Parramatta scoring first.
Yeah, it was a good game. I think I said it to you before the game started that, you know, you'd think that the superstars, mainly Millie Boyle, would just dominate. And she actually had a bit of a rough first half, really. She dropped the ball a few times, missed a few tackles and stuff like that. And the good thing about that was that while Millie Boyle led the front throughout the season to get them to the grand final, other players stood up where she was struggling a little bit to and ultimately won in the grand final. Like Hannah Southwell, as you said, Tamika Upton, you know, defensively were very strong.
Can I just jump in before Jay goes any further? He's referring to Millie Boyle at the start of the game. As was I, she had a very nervous start. She ended up with 29 hit-ups for 268 metres and 114 post-contact.
She had a very rough
start to the game, yeah.
But throw out all the signings and stuff like that. So Newcastle, the last season they played, we always said that they always had crack when they played, but it is ultimately struggled. And a good sign of a good team is when, you know, new, let's call them better players come in, no one throws the lollies in a cotton bales. And a good representation of that was Romy Tietzel. So she was 18th woman in the Origin early this year, but she was actually captain last year for Newcastle at fullback. And, you know, this year she rocked up. Tamika Upton rocks up to training that first time, and they're like, oh, shit, that's our captain spot. She moved to second row, and on the weekend, she fucking killed it. Like, she hit that line off that ended up in that try. She ran over some chick at some point. It was just put the whole don't argue up and just went. She just went flying, and she just moved into from a fullback to a second row with absolute ease and killed it the entire season. So full credit to which kind of represents what Newcastle are all about, which, you know, the men need to kind of learn, but that's another story.
And then women knights rule this town right now.
Yeah, that's right. For Para, Taufa, mate, the skill on that girl is just incredible, and the effort and how much she tried the entire game. You know, she, unfortunately, when she did score, Newcastle were well ahead, but she did not stop the entire game. And I think a big telling point for Para was when their halfback got injured. She kind of fucked her elbow up a little bit. Which was very disappointing. I actually thought Jacob Arthur was going to run on the field and help out. But you know, she stayed on, probably better than Mitch Moses would have. And
come on.
And yeah, so she stayed on, kept playing the game, but you could tell she was just struggling for the rest of the game. But and another part of it is the celebrations on the field, after the game, in the change rooms, and then in Newcastle after.
Yeah,
that was just epic.
The rock up, like when they rocked up on the bus, the amount of people that were there and the reception they gave was awesome to see.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, Newcastle, despite the obvious flaws and the fact that we haven't won a premiership in the men's last 20 years, We just love footy. Like, sorry, I can't say we. I've only been there once. Newcastle as a town love football. And because of that, you know, they celebrated these girls winning the premiership. And it was just, it was good to see the amount of people who rocked up, the amount of passion involved. And I've said it all along, like Newcastle kind of, and this is the first time I've said this about Newcastle, but they, I'd say industry leaders and how they recruited this year. Like a lot of teams went, oh, look, he's signed with us, let's just keep going. But Newcastle actively went out and pursued about 5 or 6 players to make Newcastle the team they were. And they sold them on coming to Newcastle, which, you know, is standard practice in any male-dominated sport, but they were the first ones in the comp to actually, you know, actively, and I'm going to say it again, pursue talent. Poach. Yeah, well, poach. Go for it.
But they've also been, what a they've also been ripped to shreds with regards to the first few seasons before Newcastle had a team.
Yeah, and you look at Broncos, they kind of didn't do that, and they struggled. And I feel like in the next couple of years, it rolls on to be more professional. More teams are going to be rolling out the red carpet to think. It is also interesting. You know, you've got female players like Millie Bourne, Adam Elliott, who are dating male players. And that's a bit of
Adam Elliott's dating male players. Atta boy.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a lure for, you know, and I actually believe Newcastle sold them both on the lifestyle to come and live their lives together. You know, you've got David Fifita dating one of the St. George girls. You know, stuff like that is telling. And to sell, I know it sounds a bit wrong, but in my opinion, we got Millie Boyle because he signed Adam Elliott, so I prefer Millie Boyle. But
I'd say it's the other way around, maybe.
Oh, I don't care. We got, I'd rather Millie Boyle every circumstance. But reality of it is that if that stuff does happen, players dating players, players might sell themselves as a package deal moving forward, which club, it's,
well,
it's
brothers a new, do like the Trbojevic, not Trbojevic, the Stewart brothers did that at the start of their career.
Oh, exactly right. So it's probably not something, because as far as I can tell, Australia are leading the way in female sports, but it's not something that's overly seen. And you've also got brother and sister as well. There's a few brother and sister partnerships going on as well. So it will be very, very interesting in the next couple of years as the women's get more professional as to contracts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like talking about that, the Takarangi household would be a bit bittersweet over the weekend with Brad Takarangi playing the majority of his career with Parramatta and his sister running out for Newcastle. So then picking up the premiership against the team that Brad spent most of his career at. A couple of things. You've talked about the recruitment. Tamika Upton and Millie Boyle, the two biggest recruits. Tamika Upton won the Karen Murphy medal, 181 run meters, 2 line breaks off 16 runs to go along with 3 tackle breaks, an offload, 4 tackles made, and obviously a try. And then Millie Boyle, 268 meters. They were two of 4 players for Newcastle to run for over 100 meters. One was Taylor Prettibon off the bench, and she had an absolute blinder. Not to say Caitlin Johnson didn't have a good game, 97 run meters off 23 hit ups in 49 minutes. Prettibon off the bench in half the time, 20 minutes less, 29 minutes, 163 run meters. Off the bench in 15 hit-ups. It was an incredible performance from the bench player. And Kira Dibb, Jesse Southwell did more of an organisational role. Southwell with a line break assist, try assist. Kira Dibb, goal kicking wasn't on point as it has been, but in the end it didn't really matter. But, yeah, for Parramatta, Taufa again was outstanding. And there's a reason why she's held in such high regard, being the only one outside of the Sydney Roosters players to be considered in the Rugby League Player Association medal champion. And 70 minutes at lock for a try to go along with her 141 run meters, which is pretty high for a lock. A line break, 40 tackles, with 5 missed, and the closest to her on her team was 34 tackles, which is Kendi Cherington, who again started at prop for the Eels. But while I think similarities can be drawn between the Parramatta women's squad and the men's squad, they were outplayed, but they weren't out enthused. Like the women's team tried for the entire game, as I thought the men's team did. They just didn't have the class of the opposition. And I do think Parramatta punched above their weight in the women's comp this year based on the squad. Results. And especially with the injuries that they had leading into the finals. But they have to be absolutely stoked. And I think the progress of Gail Bruton at fullback, if Vetti Welsh is back next year and you've got Bruton as well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with both players. Vetti Welsh, to me, goes back to fullback, but Bruton's going to be a very decent player if they can keep her in the system. And a couple of things with the celebrations, if people haven't seen, there's some awesome Millie Boyle T-shirts that Adam Elliott and her friends were wearing, but they rocked up at Macca's on the drive home and Millie Boyle was still in complete Newcastle kit that she was wearing in the game, rocking up into Macca's to get their late night dinner or whatever. I think the NRLW is in this kind of honeymoon period where the players can still do that. There's positives and negatives of the game continually progressing, and one of them will be the fan interaction. It'll be interesting to see how long it's going to be till the women players are at the same kind of level as the men players. Because can you imagine a NRL male bus after a grand final victory pulling into Macca's on the way home? That's just not going to happen.
Look, and I'd do it.
But we're also not NRL level players. It's like if Sam Kerr, the Australian soccer, she's not going to rock into Macca's in full kit because she'd get absolutely mobbed. She's on the face of the world's most popular sport video game. Like, that's how far she's gotten. It's ridiculous. And it'll be interesting to see how long it takes before we don't see that. But what an advertisement for the game. And congratulations to Newcastle, which I say through gritted teeth. All righty. We will move now on to the NRL Grand Final, and we welcome in Nick Wally Wallace. All right. Well, here in all his glory. Elvis.
Not much glory.
Man.
Oh dear.
See, this is lucky why. It's not why we don't put up on YouTube. We don't put up on YouTube lately because it's a pain in the ass and it takes up too much time. But there's a glorified hole in Wall's room, and that's what we're referring to, we'll say. Just over his shoulder. Oh, God.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to think before you speak, eh?
Yeah, I know. How is Wall still in his Nambour Cutters gear by the look of it, and hosting a trial for the cricket season? And
So it was our first grade team's been playing 2020 so far the last 3 weekends, and I don't want to talk about those results.
It's not a real form of cricket, don't worry.
No, that's right. That's what I keep telling everyone, even though we wasn't. But if we had a won, they do count.
the epitome of cricket.
Oh, mate, like the weekend was just. You passed on your buddy Juju to me, Adam, after last weekend. Like,
the tiffy.
You know, saying all your teams. No, all your teams lost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was mine. Buddy, we had 2 2020s on Saturday. Buddy, first game, we'll play the undefeated team. We were literally ahead of the game. They beat us in the last over. Second game, we're playing a team similar to us. We were well ahead of the game. They somehow found a way to beat us in the last over. And then Sunday, obviously, pretty much every team I tipped lost. And then Monday morning, Baltimore blew a 17-point lead in the NFL.
Yeah. And, had a bit of a rough couple of days. Well,
hey,
but
yeah,
what is so in that?
What's
in that St. George Cup you're drinking, mate?
But Arsenal beat the scum straight of North London. So within 2 weekends, Arsenal beat Tottenham.
Scum in North London.
No, that's Tottenham, motherfucker. And North London is red on both sides of the competition right now. You would have played with Kobe at some point.
Trevor Griggs, yeah.
So, great cricket story. He was playing on our indoor cricket team at one stage.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Kobe, myself, and Tristan, and I think five other mates who hadn't played cricket ever. And my nan was up, and I was like, hey, nan, you want to come watch us play indoor cricket tonight? She's like, oh, okay. She's a huge sport fan, loves it. And we're down by 6, one ball to go in indoor cricket if you hit the back and run one at 7. We're down by 7. But if you did that on the last ball of the innings, it's worth 8. So we're down by 7. So if Kobe hit a 6 and we ran one, we would have tied. We would have won by 1. And he did it. And we hit a 6, we ran one, we got 8 points, we won by 1. We're all celebrating. My nan's jumping all up and all this stuff. The team we beat were all about 12. And we're all in our early 20s. And it was just like all these like adults just jumping around.
I think I played in that one.
Was it? Were you playing as well?
Yeah. It was a good lineup of batsmen. Yeah,
it was like
me
six,
and Tim.
6 or 8 me, kids and their dad.
Me and Tim lined up because we were still in high school, so we can't cop all the responsibility for it. And then Billy and Kieran.
They were up there. And then Kobe, me, Tristan. Oh, man.
No, but then, yeah, Tristan.
What was
and...
Kobe doing in your team?
Mate, he used to play keeper, and his favourite game at keeper, we used to bowl, catch it. He used to peg the ball back at us.
Oh,
he
didn't want
to hit any. That's how indoor cricket is meant to work, mate.
Yeah. But turned around, like seeing my like nana up in the grandstand, just like, yes, fist pumping that we beat all these 12-year-olds. So good.
And then the next round, we go up against the guys in their mid-40s during the midlife crisis, and they're all drunk at 5:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that was...
I think we still lost.
Oh, yeah, we still lost to them. All right. So, NRL Grand Final, that's where we're up to. Penrith. Taking out the win over Parramatta, and it was, I think Wal summed it up pretty well in the group chat, and I mentioned it earlier, outclassed but not out-enthused. Parramatta bloody tried hard, but it was pretty evident early on in this game that they were outmatched in pretty much every aspect of the game, and I think after Penrith was up to an 18-0 lead, the thing that stood out to me the most was I didn't remember one time a Parramatta player found their front when they were running the ball, and I don't remember one time that Parramatta got the Penrith players on their back when Penrith had the ball, and the play of the ball speed and the momentum gained off that just set the tone for the rest of the match, and before Parramatta could do anything, it was 18-0. And
yeah.
And it was as simple as that.
That was as an impressive grand final performance as I've ever seen. And I hate to say it because the way they've carried on since has just pissed me off. But they no one missed their assignment on Sunday night. Like, Parra actually started pretty well the first 10 minutes. And then once Penrith just broke them open, they just had no answer. And yeah, like I said, I don't think you can question Parra's effort on the night because their scramble was the only thing that kept that respectable. They just kept turning up for each other. And you saw, I know they scored a couple of tries late in the game, but they never stopped going after the game. But yeah, you're right. Penrith were just on another level.
Yeah, this is just so hard for me to say with Parramatta and Penrith. But I could have said if it was any other team than Parramatta, and what they've shown in the last few weeks of the final series, this could have been a way bigger scoreline at halftime than what it was. I got to agree with Wal there with regards to Parramatta's effort and scramble. They nullified a couple of extra scoring chances that Penrith had. But it was a pure performance of if you do the basics really well and nullify your own mistakes, it's freaking hard to beat a team that does that. Find your front, put the other team on the back, don't make mistakes, run in pairs, line speed in defense, all the basic aspects of rugby league. And we saw an absolute clinic of it on the biggest stage. And they weren't overawed at all. You could see that. And I think once Parramatta were behind, it was kind of like a deer in the headlights kind of, oh, shit, this is getting away from us really quickly. And like you said, they had no answer to it.
Jared, what are you sitting on, Jared?
You're sitting on something. Anytime he's this quiet for this long.
Yeah. Wait, you got to admit, I didn't say anything the last couple of days.
No, yeah, that's what I mean. It's been held up.
No. Look. First things first, I don't like people saying that was the best first half in a grand final. I'd like to redirect to 3rd of October 2001, where Newcastle won 24-0 in the first half, and it was the most perfect first half you will ever see. So show some respect, people.
To be fair, I said one of. I was about six then, mate, so I can't even remember. All I remember is Dad ripping his Parramatta jersey off at half time.
They came back. I was kind of expecting a Parramatta come back in the second half to be like just to recreate that again.
What I did like though, just on that, when you talk about the first half, I saw a few people online referring to the Manly 40-0 victory over Melbourne. Like, does anyone actually remember that was only 8-0 at halftime? Like the first half was an arm wrestle. That in like the whole thing was a completely different game. How is this a comparison right now?
Since you guys get to bring up your grand finals, so I get to bring up 2010.
Yeah? I brought up based on what I saw. Guys. This is the best first half.
Back to you, Jared.
I'm clutching at straws from nearly 22 years ago, mate. Leave me alone. Look, I would like someone to re-listen to the previous episode because I kind of called a fair chunk of what happened during that episode, I'd say.
You were right in the result. I don't think Parra disgraced themselves or anything like that.
I had a bit of an issue. Okay, so during the season when Parra beat Penrith, they offloaded. They played off the cuff. They, you know, tried different things that unsettled Penrith, which worked. It worked. But what that platform was set off was a lot of hard work through the middle. And in this game, I think, like, take nothing away from Penrith. They played very well, but I don't think Parra tried to get down and dirty enough before they started doing that stuff. Like, that kick early that Brian To'o stopped. While it was a good idea, it was, I think it was a bit premature in the fact that you know, during the season, that off-the-cuff stuff started after the 20 minutes when they grinded Penrith and they moved the ball around a bit more to do it. And then they tried that really tricky shit, that which eventually worked for them. That's why they beat them. And that was a bit of a, because they kind of went out there trying to do it in the first 15 minutes when they did beat them and they proved they could beat them the first couple of times, they worked into the game a lot more to earn the right to do that kind of stuff. That was kind of my issue with Parra. And then, to be honest, I think that Penrith just fucking predicted what they were going to do and played against that. Like, that first try when Nathan Cleary hit Dylan Edwards and Sean Lane shot out at him because they knew that their second role was to try and target Cleary as much as they can. But then Edwards did the drop off Crichton ran straight through the gap that Lane created by shooting out a thing. Yeah. Like, Parramatta kind of laid their cards out in defense and went, you know what? We're going to target these blokes. And Pembroke went, fucking go for it. We'll get other players who can play that role too. And I think Parramatta were trying, they didn't adapt to what Penrith were throwing at them. They didn't go, okay, if Cleary's going to pass it, let's set our defensive line again and see what like the next step is. But Parramatta, I've been saying it for a long time, they don't adapt. And I think they had an issue with, Penrith won because for me, they're bad tactics. For me, that's what I put it down to. They outfought them. Like, they outplayed them physically and outfought them, which ultimately won them the grand final for me. Like, it was that part of the game was a bit disappointing.
That tactic was good enough for them to be the second last team standing, though. So the tactic can't be that bad.
I think it's a blender, but I agree with what Jared said with regards to when they play off the cuff, they've earned the right in order to do that. They've stuck in their grind for a longer period of time. It's how they beat the Storm twice this season as well. I think I was really excited when they did the kick across field, that early one, but it was too early in the game. And even though you've got the element of surprise there, the players are fresh enough to be able to turn, get back and get on the ball. If you did that with 2 minutes to go in the first half after sticking in the grind for perhaps longer, because what they end up doing there, if it doesn't pay off, you turn possession over to one of the strongest teams of running the ball out from their own end.
What that also did was, like, okay, for example, the Nathan Cleary try grubber for Scott Sorensen when he noticed Guffo was, you know, they come up in the defensive line, but I think Guffo chose the wrong side there. We all know what I think about Guffo, but, you know, he made a decision at the time. You can't fault him for that. He was just in the wrong place. But a difference between that, Cleary noticed that. But if you look at that play, Dylan Edwards was going to get the ball as a second spot, whereas before, if Brian Tyrer missed it, Dylan Edwards would have got it, in other words. So
Moses would have beat him there.
Oh, no, it would have been a lot closer because he didn't have to get on his bike at all because he knew Tyrer was there. Which, you know, for that reason, the kick might have been on, but it wasn't done at the right time for a couple of reasons. They didn't earn it, or they didn't. Dylan Edwards was there. So it was just little things like that. That was too premeditated, where Penrith were adapting to what
playing off the cuff.
Parramatta were doing.
Playing
what's and that it was working for them. I don't know. I feel like I'm not as critical as I could have been, but I don't know.
You're expecting a lot worse. Nah, I thought you'd be all right, actually, because I thought they still held themselves, like the way they played across the 80, they were just outclassed. But that's in my opinion. And, yeah, probably outcoached as well. With the kick, I think it's easy to say in hindsight that wasn't the right decision then, because it was the best field position they had of the game. They just didn't know that, or in the first half, I should say. Like, they didn't know in the 6th minute or whenever they did that kick that they weren't going to get into the Penrith half for the rest of that
first half.
I also think, though, that you might not have known that in, like, at the time, obviously, but I've got to say, if that was a tactic of theirs, the timing of when it's utilised is 50-50 coach and 50-50 captain. Like, they'd know when they started that set that would have been
that's not payoff. Captain on Guffo. That's on halves.
Absolutely.
I know. I'd say that play at the end of that set would have been, like, the whole team would have known that was coming at
tell you what,
like, the end of that set. And I think, yeah, the timing of that was
tell you what, though.
If you just turn the possession over.
If that and played out kick wasn't good and enough. He scored a try off that, that would have been one of the greatest NRL grand final tries in history.
It would have, but the kick wasn't good enough for that.
No, but despite that, if it did play out, it would have been one of the best ever. Do you know what? I got genuinely mad at one point in this game. Fucking hell. I was so pissed off. I threw something. Jacob Arthur scoring that try could not have pissed me off anymore.
How could you be pissed off about that?
Because he pulled off Marnie in a classic act of neopotism. Neotism, whatever it is. Hold up. So you've got Marnie, who makes 60 tackles a game for them in their last game of the thing, did not get to walk off the field at the siren because he put his dickhead son on the field, who was irrelevant to the rest of the game.
Or he gave him the chance to soak up his last 5 minutes with the club before leaving.
No, he earned the right to stay on that field for the whole 80, like he does for the last 60 games he's played for them. And the fact that he didn't get to do that and he would have been in position to score that try, that shits me off.
But if we talk about
ridiculous.
Does anyone think it's weird that one of the main tactics Parramatta had, like, not main tactics, the surprise play, we're talking about the kick across field, kicking, like, Parramatta in the whole comp, you could say that they've got the two worst wingers under the high ball. that you could have. And you're kicking across the field to Wonga Blake on one side, and then Clint Gutherson trying a short kick off to Micah Sivo's side. Like, even if you could actually kick a ball 10 metres, what, you think Sivo's going to be able to jump high enough to catch it?
I think he's actually targeting Sean Lane on that side, though.
Yeah,
yeah, but it, like,
we say second,
I was so embarrassed for anyone who's a casual fan coming to watch rugby league, and they see one of our high-profile players not be able to kick a drop kick 10 metres and keep it within the field. I was just like, oh, God, that's so hard to watch at this level. That was so embarrassing. But, yeah, I was... Anyone else? No?
Oh, we've got the referee decisions coming up soon. But we got to jump out for a second.
Oh, talking about embarrassing. All right. So, embarrassing. we mentioned last episode it didn't affect the outcome of the game.
I'm gonna switch this up for everyone
now. Jared's gonna agree with Wall and I reckon here. Now
the referees, especially the bunker, did a horrible fucking job.
For fuck's sake.
that obstruction call, like, for me, it as I said to Adam earlier, it is actually ironic. Because everyone's been calling all year for that to be the right decision because it didn't ultimately impact the play. But as far as consistency goes, which everyone's been screaming more over the top of that kind of stuff for that obstruction play, consistently, that is not a try. 7 days a week, 365 days. I couldn't believe it when they awarded it. I was like, holy shit, what is going on? And as Wall said, Mitchell Moses... But you put a bit of curry on it.
Put some mayo on it, yeah.
Put some mayo on it, that's exactly right. Which, you know, 99% of the players in the competition do. There's, you know, if they went that easy down in a tackle, it'd be the softest players in the NRL considering some of the knockdowns they get. But, yeah, it was horrible and there's no excuse for it. But luckily... Penrith was so dominating that ultimately didn't affect the result. That's the only saving grace, because imagine Graham Ennersley's meeting yesterday or today or whatever it was, whenever, I don't think he's even had it, to be fair, to describe, because it's such an indirect result.
Do you reckon it's going to be like the 20th one this year where he apologises for a poor decision?
Oh, mate. It's just, but see, ultimately, and you guys can agree that You would prefer that be a try most times out of 10, wouldn't you?
I think the three of us know that that's a try. Yeah. The issue is
but
the fact that they changed the enforcement of a rule in the biggest game of the year and went against everything that they've done for the whole year. The point of Jared in the past saying I introduced grey areas, part of that grey area is common sense, because common sense for one is not common sense for the other. So they made the obstruction go black and white. If you hit the outside shoulder, it's going to be an obstruction. I will back Daly Cherry Evans to the hilt. One thing that he's got in his game, which I hate.
Why do you always put Cherry into it?
No, because he's one of the best at what Mitchell Moses does. He takes contact and he'll fall on the ground, which shits me because he can actually tackle. But
you
he'll
say
do...
Cherry dives?
Let me finish. He'll take contact and hit the ground when he sees that the other team will be able to score, because he knows they won't get there. And I hate it, but because he knows what the rule's going to be, he does it. Mitch Moses does it. Who's the other one? Brighton Okora is actually a really good component. Exponent of this. Mitch Moses did the right thing. He knew there's no chance he was going to be able to get there. He knew that there was a high chance they were going to score, so he played to his in his favour. And the first time all year, they applied common sense in the bunker and overruled it.
It was always going to be a try. It was always going to be a try when Ashley Klein said he's made a defensive decision to grab Kidia. Yeah. Like, the bunker was never going to overrule that. And, yes, like, it didn't change anything. But at the end of the day, they've rewarded kick out for running the wrong line. Every back row was taught to run at the inside shoulder.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done that, and they've rewarded him for it. And I tell you what, if that was 12 all or whatever. I'd love to see what the decision was, because I don't know if they're doing that. And the worst thing about that play was the last pass was 2 meters forward.
it's like the Tamalolo and kick out, guilty, not guilty, shoulder charge, hit, dangerous contact thing. Cowboys had won that game and Penrith had lost, they would have reversed the charges. It's got to do with the...
It was insanely...
And then the Cleary rate that went backwards, which went forward.
There was one that Parramatta jumped up and they called it a knock on, and it went the exact same direction as Cleary's. And then they said the bunk was like, nah, knock on, challenge unsuccessful. Like, man, everything that was like 50-50 just did not, or some things that weren't in 50-50, just wasn't their night, honestly. Like, and it didn't have any bearing on the result because Penrith were that far ahead, but still.
It's just such an embarrassing look for the game. On the biggest stage, you put the two referees that are most prone to errors in the most powerful. And I thought Ashley Klein actually did an okay job on the field.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But
he still has to follow what happens in the bunker.
That's what I mean. Like,
I'll defend. If the bunker was ruled out, I'll defend every decision to the hilt, because, you know, you're just looking at
eye. You're in benefit of the doubt most of the time.
I watched Channel 9 one, and you had Cameron Smith and Andrew Johns practically could not handle what was happening. And then there was that view. Then I don't know if you guys saw it from behind the Parramatta team.
Yeah.
That view of that one where you just saw the Viliama kick out, just literally, I think he stepped off his right to deviate to that gap as well, just slightly. And you're just like, the fuck? I hate, everyone knows what I think of captain's challenges. I hate them. And I don't like bunker decisions. I don't even watch them at this point in time. I just stick my phone, because 9 times out of 10, unfortunately, it's wrong. And it's getting to a point where, it showed on the viewership. That was the lowest ever rated grand final between Fox Sports and Channel 9. And people were just off it. And I don't know if you had to get to a certain point, because they lost Adam after that goddamn destruction call. Adam, stop watching
say that.
Even though...
Don't say that on NRL podcast.
I was reading the boys' messages, but I was being very, very quiet. And I have been the last couple of days, but I had a bit of a smile on my face after the game, just because, you know, It was good for me, because I got a lot right. But the reality of it is that the NRL fucked up. They fucked up a lot.
Yeah. We talked about the start at the show, like, this will be the last 6am podcast in this format after 3 years. And a couple of reasons. Jared's family's growing. Was a very busy man. And I'm... literally fallen out of love with the game over the last 3 years after analysing it this much, and just seeing how many better products there are out there. I just don't enjoy it as much. I'm definitely going to keep watching Q Cup and New South Wales Cup, but at NRL level, I just don't enjoy it as much as I used to. Mate, and
we'll see half you in March 3rd. I don't give a shit what you say.
At the moment, there's not much to draw me back right now. As well,
you can come support Newcastle. We're on the up.
Oh, I'm not that desperate. It's Dylan Edwards, Dally M award winner,
Clive Churchill.
Sorry, fuck's sake, Clive Churchill award winner. We've already done the Dally M / Rugby League Player Association awards. Clive Churchill winner, deserving
100%.
Absolutely,
yeah, cool. Yeah, we're all in.
As soon as that tackle was made, there was no question. Sorry?
Only person that came close was Toto, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? In that first 20, only in the first 20, but Moses Leota was doing a fucking good job to get it.
Right. He set the standard of their forward pack. Like,
yeah.
He just was on a mission to shut down Campbell Gillard and Paolo in the first stint, and you barely saw them after that.
Parramatta were trying to put hits on. He was just a missile. Like, he was great to watch.
I thought Kikau in the first, like, in the exchanges, in the whole entire first half, just his physical presence led to so much indecision in the Parramatta defensive line. It led to the Moses poor defensive read when he was the lead runner. But I think that came from when he was the runner and he was hit with the ball early on. He was damaged. He ran over, was it Moses at one point? Yeah, he actually like palmed him, ran over the top of him. He was so damaging with his early runs. And he was able to do that because of the quick play, the ball speed.
I've been waiting 3 days to say this. But Charlie Staines broke Guffo's ankle.
It wasn't through, like, it was just a change of direction.
It was funny, no matter how you swing it.
I thought you broke his knee. Like, that did not look good when he went down.
No, it didn't. But Jesus Christ, it was Charlie Staines, though. This made it funny.
While we're talking about Guthrie, though, what a hero playing with a broken hand, mate. That's leadership.
That's leadership.
And I get the Penrith supporters like loving their squad and all that sort of stuff. And I did see more than a fair share of people questioning Dylan Edwards' non-selection in the Australian team. He had a good a great season. He had a really good season. He's a damn good player. He's not Tedesco level, guys. Like,
no.
Chill out. He's not Trbojevic level when he's at his peak. He's not that level. He's a damn good, solid NRL fullback who does his job very well. He's one of those players where his worst performance and his best performance, there's not a big gap between the two. But his best performance isn't at that same level as the top guy's best performance. He has awesome plays in him, but he's just damn good without being that next.
I think the best way to explain it is he can run just as much as Tedesco, but he doesn't have game-breaking ability that Tedesco, Mitchell, Trbojevic has. And that's the difference.
That's the difference. Like, you look at the era of fullbacks when Slater played, and there was some damn good fullbacks around his time. Like, you look at how many representative games Matt Bowen played and the game-breaking ability he had, but he wasn't great under the high ball and he wasn't great defensively. But with the ball in hand, he was one of the best fullbacks in the league for his entire career, and he was so deceptive and hard to tackle, but he was never going to break into that next level because his all-round game wasn't at the same level as someone like Slater. There's so many good fullbacks who are stuck behind someone who's just elite, and he's just not in that category. While I can see why Penrith fans wouldn't give him up for anyone else, I think if you questioned fans of most other clubs, there's probably a couple of fullbacks they'd take ahead of him. Not all fans, some would prefer the Edward style of player, but if I was a Penrith fan, I'd be celebrating my grand final victory. I'd be celebrating his Clive Churchill. There's no need to get bitter about a non-selection. He's in there as the emergency, one of the emergency players anyway.
In a 24-man squad, you need versatility and you can only play fullback.
Yeah, and that's another point too.
I actually saw someone comment that today and they're like, well, so can Tedesco. And I was like, Tedesco, calm your tits.
Yeah. Where does this leave Parra? You reckon is the window closed or what? I was thinking about this, and probably it's a little bit different, but people forget how bad Penrith were in their first grand final in 2020. They were down 26-0 against that Melbourne team and scored 4 tries in the last 15 minutes to make it look respectable. So, you know, they were overawed by the occasion that first time as well. And I know Parra was losing a lot of depth out of their squad, but, you know, Josh Hodgson, if he gets a full season in, maybe he's got that extra bit of creativity that takes the pressure off Moses and Brown and Gutherson.
I think,
you know, just that extra threat.
I think he'll be the leadership. They might be lacking a little
that
bit.
That too, yep. He's played big games.
Marnie's a loss, and Hodgson potentially can cover that, but losing the versatility in their core, losing the pure toughness of Papali, like, he, God damn it, he was the one who scored those they set up those tries.
He made 49 tackles.
Yeah, like losing that is, I think, bigger deal than potentially losing Marnie, because they bought, who they bought? They bought Momosia and
Jermaine
Hopgood, which, he's, you know, they're quality players. Which I fully respect them as their ability, but on the other hand, I'm concerned about last year when they bought
Papali'i. Just remember though, Papali'i was a nobody when he went to Power.
Well, that's exactly right. But can that
he was to the general rugby league community. I think the three of us rated him pretty highly when he was at the Warriors and couldn't believe they let him go.
He'd fallen off the face of the earth, though. Like, he'd barely been seen in first.
Yeah, no, but that's exactly right. But can,
that's like
can
Elise Katoa.
Can Lightning strike twice? Can Jermaine Hopgood or Momosia be the same level as quickly as Papali'i was? I don't know. Mm. Like, they definitely have potential, but missing 49 tackles on an edge is fucking hell. That's a big deal. And then I don't believe half the articles, but the halves haven't even signed contracts. Yeah, they're waiting for
going anyway.
But they're waiting to test their market to try and pump it up. Yeah. And then,
well, Dylan Brown came out and said that it's not about money for him. It's there's a lot of other things that go into it. And Mitch Moses has come out and said that he wants to re-sign and getting a toast in the grand final.
I do believe they will, but I also believe that they need some sort of backup for Pennacini in the centres, because Opacek or Simerson aren't doing the job.
Opacek's gone.
Was pretty good.
Oh, Opacek's gone to Redcliffe. I do believe they need.
Simerson was good. But yeah, no, I agree. They need depth. They need
a bit more. They can't have such a Manu Vatavai on the wing with Wonga Blake, like his rocks and diamonds consistently. Yeah. You can't have that.
So I think you can have a player like that if you're solidified elsewhere, which they're not.
They're potentially a few signings away, and it's going to be an interesting off-season, and it'll be interesting if they can turn around what their obvious flaws are. Like, the inconsistency is a big one. I think there are a few signs away, which, you know, there's enough people out there to cover that. I don't know, like, for example, a big article came out during the week of Marnie Taupou getting rejected twice to go to Parramatta, and he's having a sook because he could have played the grand final. I think Marnie Taupou would be a fantastic off-the-bench rotation for those front rowers. You know, it'd be really good. Like, players like that who come on, who's been there, played World Cups. I think he won the World Cup in 2000 and when they won it. I'm not sure. He might have been a bit young.
David Clemens on the market?
Yeah. Oh, fucking hell, I hope not.
with the Papali'i.
I think they're just a bit, like, you know, imagine they got through their dollars at someone like Noff Luma. Yeah, I know he's not going to.
Near the start of the season, they should have been throwing money at Munster.
But imagine Noel Luma on that wing. It's just going to shore that up, and it's going to be a just as good finisher they've got now. And he's not going to drop a fucking football.
They need to get more out of their wingers in regards to carries as well. That's where they really got let down.
Which is surprising, because they've got very big, strong wingers. They're very, very good. And,
well, I think Bailey Simonson had the most metres out of their back five, and he played less than 60 minutes.
And I would have that conversation.
Gutherson has to catch a lot of the deep balls because they're not going to.
But that's my point. It's a criticism of Caelan Ponga at Newcastle. But when he catches the ball, he doesn't run. He just drops it off to either Edric Lee or Dom Young. They're bigger. They're stronger.
Still better than Darius Boyd just dropping to the ground.
But my point is that, you know, despite what I say about Guffo, he does run the ball back out of his own half a fair chunk. And if he just dropped that ball off and went and someone got into Steve O'Zier or Blake Zero, mate, you need to be Brian Toto of this team. Like, so just put a fire up their ass. I don't know, mate. Just a few things, little things need to change, but I think they need a few more people like Marty Taupou, like David Nofaluma, like just some people to come in and, I don't know, just kind of change a few things. I think they have enough game breakers. I think that's the problem. They don't have enough consistency. I think that's more of a problem for
them. More Dylan Edwards.
Well,
yeah. I think they ask too much of Gutho. Like, defensive efforts, carries, and then he's just expected to be everywhere in attack as well. And I know a lot of the good fullbacks do that, but I think what was expected of him, especially when they were hiding Longa Blake from the catch and bomb. So Guffo's pretty much covering 60 metres side to side.
That's a really good point. I'm thinking of you think of your most proficient and efficient attacking fullbacks over the last decade, like the top guys. You've got Slater, you've got Tedesco, and I'm talking like attack wise. You've got Slater, Tedesco, Stewart. Help me out here.
I think the biggest thing per game,
Stewart's ahead of the three of them. But you have a look at their back lines. While all three were good defensively, Stewart had Jamie Lyon and Steve Bell in the centres. Slater had Geyer, Inglis at the end. Will Chambers at his best. You look at Tedesco, who's had the Morris boys at different stages. You had Orbison. Like these really sound defensive players in the back line, they couldn't get there all the time, but it gave the three of them a little bit of that extra support and effort, and they didn't have to be there to cover everything. You put Gutherson behind a back line of Wunga Blake, Panasini, Sivo. You get where Walt's coming from because defense isn't high on their fucking priority
list. I think that's what people are missing on that on the try where Cleary put Sorensen over. The reason Guffo was on the short side was because they were one man short.
There
was a 3-on-2 until he got there. And then all of a sudden, everyone pointed the finger at him for being out of position.
He made a decision which was needed. But I think that the thing that I think
you've also got to give credit to Cleary there because there's still half the halfbacks wouldn't have even seen that.
I think what represents Wall's point the most is when Guffo came onto the scene, he was always fit, but they never got him. He wasn't doing the things he is now in defense and running as much as he could. His biggest thing when he first started out at Power at fullback was his ball playing. He was a very good ball player and on his best day, but that can't happen anymore. Either they're not setting him up or he's just fucking gassed because he's doing everything else. And I think that represents where they're at the most because while Guffo's had more strings to his bow, his strongest asset has been, not used as much. And it's very disappointing, actually, because he is, while I'm not the biggest fan of him and I've got my doubts on the bloke, I can't deny his ball playing ability is on point. It's at the same level as Tedesco on its day, and Parramatta just not utilising enough. Against the weaker teams does get utilised, but against Penrith on the weekend, I don't think, while he probably didn't get the biggest chance, I don't think he touched the ball in the opposition 20. And he needs to touch the ball in the opposition 20. He really does.
I think they had 9 play the balls in Penrith's 20 compared to Penrith's 39 or something like that.
Yeah, but he makes the right decisions. Like if you put him, he's like a better version of Darius Boyd because Darius Boyd, when they've done that sweet play, he either gave it short or gave it long. He always made the right decision at the right time, and the pass was on point every single time. Guffo is kind of like that, and they're not using it.
You've also got to remember when Guffo came to Parramatta. From Manly, he'd only played centre or 5'8 at Manly. He'd never played fullback because Stewart was there and then Trbojevic was there. And I know he's been there long enough now to really know the ins and outs of the game, but I also think he's been there long enough now for us to know that what he is as a player. Now it's the club's responsibility to recruit players that are going to fit around him as he's in their long-term plans. And they know that his strengths lie in his attacking ability and his final defensive efforts. Now, or his defensive positioning. Now, if they're the two strengths, you can't then, like Wall said earlier, you can't rely on him to then be running the ball back the whole time. They need to be recruiting players. They're going to be able to do that around him so you can get the best out of your players.
I think I went on a bit of a tangent. I just want to be clear, very, very clear. I don't like him despite the fact I was confident.
Just
I'm
sorry.
Very dislike him.
Sorry?
What a man.
I want to finish off. Is there any other team in the comp that could have maybe altered the outcome of the game?
No. Melbourne.
No.
You think?
No,
I really don't think how they finished the season they could have.
I think South could have given them a hard crack just because of their ability, their game breakers and their team.
No, I think it would have had to come down to a defensive side who can control the
run. Oh, no, he didn't say win. He said alter the result. I think Melbourne and South were the only two teams who could have.
South are worse defensively than Parramatta.
By 9 points.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I don't think if a team was coming in to try and outscore Penrith, I don't think that would have worked. It would have had to have been a team that can take the sting and speed out of a team that I think the term they use in American football is running downhill when the team's so on top that it looks as though they're running downhill at their opposition because they just can't stop the speed or the meters that they are creating. Was there a forward pack out there who we gave Parramatta the edge of the forwards leading into this and they got dominated in the exchanges of Penrith scored points, could there have been someone that could have literally slowed the speed of the game down?
So yeah, I think team, Twins and Clemmer.
The Roosters are the only, and I said this to, I think, my dad, and I don't think the Roosters would have beaten them or even gotten any closer, but I think the Roosters pack with Radley and Hargraves would have had the ability to maybe unsettle the Penrith pack a little bit or draw one of them to make a mistake and, you know, maybe just break the game open a little bit. I honestly, and this isn't just Parramatta bias, but I don't think any other team would have got any closer than they did. Maybe another team might have scored a few more points, but you said South. Like, South conceded 32 points in, 45 minutes against them last week, and Penrith weren't even that good in the prelim. Like, they weren't at the level they were playing in the grand final. I'd find it hard to find a team this year. Like, I'm sure in previous years you could find a team, but I couldn't find a team this year that could have matched what they put up on grand final day.
You know what I would have loved to see is in the last 2 weeks of the finals where Roosters got knocked out, Rhea Hargraves announces his retirement and signs with whoever's playing against Penrith. And he walks on that field, knocks Luai out cold, and then walks off the field. How good would that be? And it would It would suit 100% suit the end of Rhea Hargraves' goddamn career, wouldn't it?
Let's say that would have kicked over a can of worms.
But imagine how that bloke ends his career, just knocks out someone like Luai and then walks away.
He would get a standing ovation. Everyone would
I cannot stand Luai.
Hit us up. Post-game antics. Come on,
mate.
Nah,
let's just move on for that. We've been talking long enough on that one. Good. All right. So congratulations to Penrith. Unprecedented. All four grades. Grand final victories. Well done. Well done, Dylan Edwards. Keep your celebrations under control and we'll leave it at that. All right. 2022 NRL season has wrapped up. Attention now turns to the World Cup. And we're going to cover a couple of teams very quickly. So Papua New Guinea has updated their squad with players such as Alex Johnson, Justin Olam and Xavier Coates. So you can check out their entire World Cup squad. Will be a stronger squad than who faced the Prime Minister's 13 last week, the week before. Other names from the NRL, previous names from the NRL, sorry, I should have said, Reece Martin, who's playing over in the Super League, as well as Nene McDonald, Lachlan Lamb, Watson Boas as well. So check that out. Also, Tonga has updated their World Cup squad with the likes of David Fifita, and it shows how strong their forward pack is. And while these players aren't the most consistent, if your forward pack is leaving out Tevita Pangai Jr. and Joe Ofengawi, especially Ofengawi from the year that he's had, you've got a pretty damn strong forward pack. They're also not taking Katoni Staggs, who we know on his day is a very talented player. From the Super League, they are bringing over names such as Conrad Harrell, Will Hopewadi, and Tui Lolahia. So they are going to have a very entertaining team, most likely one of, if not the best forward packs in the tournament, and will be must-watch TV, obviously coached by Christian Wolf, who will be the assistant at Redcliffe for the next couple of seasons when they come to the comp. For the Gillaroos, Tamika Upton and Millie Boyle have pulled out of the World Cup. Tamika Upton due to a calf injury and Millie Boyle due to her work commitments of the business that she has started up. Financially, it's just not viable for her to take off any more time. Hopefully, that is one of the things that will change in the future in the women's game. So Emma Tonegato and Shaylee Bent have come into the squad. Was left out to Sammy Bremner.
How was
Tamika? Well, you got Tamika Upton and Sammy Bremner both ahead of us.
Seriously.
So, like, pull your head Tamika in. Upton's better than Tonegato, mate. That's just what it is. Yes, Newcastle player is what it is. Grand final, Clive Churchill winner. Can we just talk about the
fact?
Yeah, Tamika Upton is the better player than Tonegato, mate. Can we just talk about the fact that naturally as Australians, we cannot stand the English team because they're Poms. But is there another layer of hate as to who they named as their captain and the pure absolute crap they're putting on the field with Ryan Hall being named in their squad? Like, how bad is the English Sam Tompkins? Like, how bad is their squad? That bloke is captain, Ryan Hall, who came over to Australia as the leading point scorer in English rugby league history. Couldn't even get a goddamn run. I don't think he even scored a try in first league in NRL. And how is he the 30? He must be 44 at this point.
And
still
Tompkins.
Getting the run in the English world, in the English World Cup team.
I think he's just old enough to drink.
I just don't know. You have to be 14 to drink in England. What are you talking about? I just don't understand England at all. Like, right now, what the fuck? Tompkins is captain and Ryan Hall getting named at all. Like, surely he's not
best. Have a look at it, though. Look who's going over there and winning Man of Steel. They're people that aren't even good enough to crack it in NRL.
Don't judge that too hard. I want Brody Croft to play for Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, but, like, you look at it. Like, Jackson Hastings went over there, won it. Jai Field. He literally couldn't even get a run of that Dragons team when we were basket case. Like, the game's just, and Matt Duffy will win it next year. Like, that's just the kind of game that they have.
I know, but Sam Tonkins is their captain. Oh.
Let's move on, mate.
Oh, I can't.
I thought you were gonna say Gareth Willard.
Is he playing? Is he named?
I don't know. I haven't even seen the squad, mate.
If he's named, I'm glad we're not doing the podcast anymore because that is ridiculous.
No, we're not.
I would be more mad about that than what happened on Sunday night with the obstruction call, for fuck's sake.
We'll have our final break there and we'll come back and look at the Kangaroos updated World Cup squad before we wrap up the 6EN podcast for the final time. All right, so the Australian Kangaroos squad has been named. 13 uncapped players, 21 of the 24 State of Origin players from 2022 in the squad. I can't remember. When we talk about the captaincy thing, whether it be Cherry Evans or Tedesco.
Good news. Good news. Gareth Widdop's not an English squad. It's safe.
Tedesco, captain. Cam Murray, vice-captain. Isaiah Yeo, vice-captain as well.
Fantastic.
On the official NRL website. And I think my favourite thing that just to me sums up the professionalism of the NRL. And while it wasn't the World Cup, it was another squad announcement, and it was the NRL squad, as it was the NRL Grand Final squad announcements. The backdrop that they used for that was actually an AFL field, which was hilarious to me. So the actual official NRL social media account put the Penrith and the Parramatta team lists with a background of the AFL Grand Final field. which was hilarious.
The fact MCG that, is the best field in the world.
I didn't even realize that there were AFL posts in the background and Toyota is the sponsor on the back of the picture they use. But so 100% NRL. I'm glad that on the official Kangaroo squad, they didn't forget to put Vice Captain XYZ. Yo, oh, what they did. They're bad. But anyway, we've put together our best team lists. We've talked about notable omissions from our points of view. And if you haven't seen the Australian squad yet, you can jump on NRL.com, freaking wherever you want to find it. It's all over social media everywhere. Go have a look yourself. We're not going to read out the entire list. But I think between us is 1 to 3 players that may be surprise inclusions and maybe a couple that are surprise omissions. And I'm including standby players as omissions. That's Dylan Edwards, Nico Hines, and Damien Cook. Who wants to jump in first with their notable inclusions and notable omissions?
I'll do it. Perhaps.
All right, Jared's up first.
Are we doing it for my 17 or just
the just in the general squad first? Who made it in that you didn't expect, and who do you think may have been left out that you expected to be there?
I'm not a fan of Hines. Hines not being there. I think he deserves a right. And the question about the versatility side of things, we were speaking about Edwards. He could play anywhere in the back line. And he could play lock and second row at a pinch. I honestly believed his season warranted his selection. Jack Whiten, while an absolutely fantastic player, I wouldn't have been mad if they swapped him out for Whiten, but here we are. That's the biggest one for me. I'm not overly mad about the team, but I do think that the Dally M winner with the season he's had and his versatility should have got in there.
Yeah, I agree. Hines should have been there, but I would have dropped Burton over White.
Oh, sorry, Burton. Yeah, that's a better. Yeah, sorry, everybody.
I've sort of been pretty vocal about this all year, and I don't dislike the bloke as a player or anything like that, but I think the game's moved past him a bit, and that's Jake Trbojevic. I don't see him as an Australian caliber lock anymore.
I think he's going to play prop.
Well, that's even worse. With all due respect, but I know there's a lot of props that are going to play for other nations, but yeah, there's got to be some better options. With all due respect. Other than that, like there's.
I'm taking no offense, and I'm a Manly supporter, man. He was the first player I saw and went, whoa, he wasn't even good for Manly this year. How's he getting the Australian squad?
Yeah.
I've actually got him in my best 17.
Yeah, well, I don't.
me neither.
I don't see the point of him. Like, we need people that – we got Isaiah, Cameron Murray, players like that that can tie up the middle. Why do you need another one that's not going to make a dent in the line?
Yeah. Like, he was most valuable in that transition period between James Graham and what he was bringing to the game with the forwards playing the ball, like being able to use the ball. And that's only valuable now if you can also dint the line or run it to the line as a danger so defenders come towards you.
Look, obviously I'm not mounting. I've met him a few times. My theory is that You look at forward packs that are going to be rocking up to this World Cup. You know, the Islander forward packs are just fucking, you're just looking at them going, oh, shit. England forward pack, you know, they're going to have Bateman, Whitehead, Walmsley, whatever the hell his name is.
Walmsley, Luke Thompson.
They got that young player, Miguel Oledinic. I can't pronounce his name, but he's a young player, and he's pretty barnstorming. Young Kai Pearce-Paul, watch him out for a Newcastle jersey in the next couple of years. Absolute weapon. But I think what the point I'm trying to get is they've got everyone in the world has very damaging forward packs, right? They're very big, strong. You wouldn't put them as overly fit. And what Australia is different from what I can see in their team is they're going for speed. They're going for handling the big guys coming at them, like just blunting them, and then having their players like Tino, RCG, Carrigan Cotter to a point as well. Just the starting team is blunt and handle that for 20 minutes of business that these teams will come out with. And then these powerful players is going to come on the field and start being quicker. They're not necessarily bigger. They're going to be quicker than them. And I think that's going to be Gerber's role.
Are you trying to relate Gerber to speed?
No,
oh, no, I'm you're not. Bunting. Okay,
bunting them.
Yeah, he's. I don't see any other point of him. That's the only point I can see of him playing is that he's just going to be in the middle, because despite what you see in attack, he will not miss a tackle.
The point of him. He's there to play the group games against Lebanon and Jamaica, so the other guys don't.
I don't know. That's what I see as the reasoning for it, because he's not going to do any penetration in attack. His ball skills, you don't need that because you've got Cam Murray and Isaiah Yeo there. So I would just think he's just there for his pure defense and just not missing an assignment in there and blunting the bigger teams, because you look at the team, we have the smallest forward pack in the whole world right now.
Yeah. Talking about damaging ball runners, there's a few players that were left out that I threw in the group chat that I think could take that role and be a damaging ball runner.
Oh, look, it is what it is, but that's just my theory as to why he's there.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think Carrigan could do that just as effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, look, he probably could, but that's just my theory. Like, I could be vastly off the page, but I can't see why else you'd be there. Yeah.
I can't see why else you'd be there.
So I think I had probably more questions, I guess, for more players. I think we both all agree. Burton out, Hines in would be
I'd love it.
A better call all round. I had an issue with Dribojevic as well, but also had an issue with regards to Liam Martin, and almost along the same lines as Dribojevic. He does his job well, which is, I guess, taking the hard runs on the edge. I wouldn't classify him as a line running back rower. I wouldn't classify him as a back rower that bends the line or has a nose for the for a try. He's sound defensively. Aww. I get that, but there's nothing in his game to me that I wouldn't bet on the upside of a Hudson Young or a Nat Butcher to take that role, who can do those same things at the same level, but have more aspects of their game that are viable. And if we're talking about, we don't have a damaging forward pack with regards to strike, I think is a way to look at it. There's no Fifita, there's no kick out, there's no even Tamalolo style player outside of really Jeremiah Nanai when he gets a bit of space and Crichton when he gets a bit of space. But I think Hudson Young would be extremely valuable running off a Munster out on the edge or a sweep play with Tedesco and then him straightening up and popping Hudson Young through a hole, because we know he's strong, he's fast, he's got agility, and we know he can score a try. Bowles bloody earned half his salary this year off him.
Get Bo Fermor in.
Even a Bo Fermor. I wouldn't have even been upset with a Sean Lane style of player who's got that offload in his game for that second phase play, which, talking about those big forward packs, the best thing we can do against them is to keep that second phase play going and tie them out even further. And while Cam Murray, Isaiah Yeo have the ball playing ability, once into contact, the offloading ability, looking through this squad,
I think we're going to play very, very direct and quick. I don't think.
Oh, I think we are, but direct and quick with an offload takes it to another level. We've seen what.
I think we're just going to get up the field and give it to our back line and say, good luck stopping us, to be fair.
Yeah, you can do it. And I think I agree with you. I think that's going to be the main point. But if you can pick up more than just some cheap points through your forward pack, it goes a long way to winning the tournament.
So you did say that you don't see Liam Martin as, you know, the attacking player scoring points thing. Would you class Olakau'atu in that?
as a four that's got a nose for the try.
Yeah. Because Ala Carter only scored 3 more tries and Liam Bunn had more try assists than him this year and only played 1 more game than him.
Yeah, I could see that, but you're also looking at Liam Martin in a team that's a hell of a lot more advanced than Manly is.
Well, in my mind, Liam Martin's less of an attacking player than Ala Carter.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Ola Kawatu runs off a good halfback, though.
I would also say that in the Manly system this year, early on, teams weren't switched on to Ola Kawatu and what he could do. And then in that down period, it was pretty much, we got no Trbojevic, Manly's playing like shit, give it to Ola Kawatu and they could triple team him, basically. To be fair to Liam Martin, he's not the player that teams are setting their defense around. So when he does get the ball in front of, say, a Dylan Edwards or who else plays, who's the center that plays on his side?
Crichton.
I didn't see enough of him, but I'd assume that he's going to be getting the ball in quite a bit of space because the defense will be reading the players around him. With regards to Manly, who are you going to defend, Ola Kawatu or Brad or Morgan Harper? Like
Morgan Harper.
Yeah.
That's a comp, mate.
I get the point there. I just think someone like Hudson Young or Nat Butcher can do what Liam Martin does, just to a better ability.
Yeah. I would love Nat Butcher to get Australia. He would play for New South Wales Australia for a long time, like rating that high. He's a very good player.
I think what you said about Dylan Edwards before is very similar to Liam Martin. Like his best and worst game, there's not a big difference in.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good in the grand final, to be honest.
He's a good player.
Set that platform early. Yeah.
It's just, if for the Australian team, do you want good players or... I think there's enough players in this squad whose bottom, like worst game and best games are still ahead and can do it consistently, that you can then take a swing on some younger players with greater... what's the word? Like, you can take a bigger home runs. Yeah, or you can take a bigger home run swing. Like, to me, a Hudson Young would be a home run swing. I could see him getting a double in a quarter final coming off the bench because he's explosive, strong, agile.
Martin's going to get player at a goddamn tournament now.
Well, I talked up Sean Lane and he bloody, like, made the first defensive error in the grand final, didn't he? But when you've got such a solid team around, you can afford to have those upswing players here and there, which is like we were talking about Parramatta before. You can have a Wonga Blake if you've got a Justin Olam inside them, because they can make up for the deficiencies of the player, and then you just play the strengths of a Wonga Blake. He's a sound pick. I just think there was other options there. He'll do his job. He'll represent Australia as well as he can. He won't be a weakness. I just thought there was greater upside in other players. Anyone that you were just going to finish on a positive note here. Is there anyone in the squad that you were just super happy? Like, yeah, this guy really deserves his position and you wouldn't have seen it coming, say, at the start of the season. Like, I'm glad this guy was picked. And don't, like...
This is kind of answering your question in a weird way, but with how Cowboys finish last year with their bottom four effort and then how Holmes has led from the front this year has just been amazingly epic. And you know what? I think if they still had the same year, he would have made it. But like I think I said it to Will yesterday. We both, all three of us put our teams in the chat and I put Holmes in the centres and Tulagi on the wing because there's not many wingers in the team. But he put Wyden in the centres and Holmes, which is probably more what's going to happen. But for me, if they played bad this year, yes, Holmes goes on the wing. But the fact he's led from the front so well for Cowboys this year, I'm perfectly happy to have him in the centres just because he's been, for me, the top two or three centres in the competition by a long way. So I know it's a weird answer, but I'm very happy Holmes is there, and I'd like to see him play a few games in the centre for Australia.
I know. I don't think it's a weird pick as well. I think out of all the players that are there, outside of the incumbents, he most deserves to be there, and he deserves to be the centre, because outside of Joey Manu, we've already talked about his best performance outside of centre. Holmes has been the best centre. You think about what he did in Origin, especially in the first game. I think it's a great pick. Well, anyone outside of Ben Hunt will say. I did read an article today saying Damien Cook's on the extended one because Australia's gone with two hookers in Ben Hunt and Harry Grant. And I was like, they just literally refer to Ben Hunt as the hooker. I was like,
yeah. See, I was going to go him just purely because if someone had told me at the start of the year he'd be the starting hooker for Australia.
He's not.
He will be.
I think there's a high chance. It's either him or Ruben Cotter.
Same format. like, he was always going to be in the squad, I felt, but I never thought he'd be in contention to be a starting nine. I thought he'd be maybe the 14 at best, but that's his reward for his season and his Origin series. Outside of that, I can't even think of who else in the squad. I guess Ruben Cotter's probably the one.
You wouldn't have predicted that.
Oh, it was a dummy half. No one
knew if he was a hooker or a lock. Like, no one knew what his position was, and then he's just obviously been one of the breakout stars for this year, and another one that's been on the Cowboys wagon. And he'll be well deserved, and he'll be outstanding off the bench, I think.
I hope he gets a run against those big Tonga Fiji teams.
He would love that. He's gonna be like the Staffy in between a bunch of like Great Danes, and he's just gonna like, let's go. We didn't talk about it before. I think Lindsay Collins is a pretty risky selection, to be fair. Just with his injury history, and the fact that the standby players, none of them can come in and take that position. But that's not who I'm picking. I just saw that then. And I never really thought I'd vouch for this guy because he's a New South Wales and ex-Melbourne, now Bulldogs player. I'm extremely happy that Josh Adokar got his selection. I think we all agreed that he should have been in the New South Wales squad, and I personally believe that he'd be in the Australian squad regardless, even if he didn't play Origin. The amount of pressure that was on him coming to the Bulldogs and how poorly they and he started the season, with regards to try scoring, I'm pleased for him that he was selected. I believe he warrants selection in it. And I was going to say Murray Taulagi, kind of as a bolter, but I think overall for players who deserve to be there and should have been there despite everything that's happened this year, I'm pleased to see Adokar there. So I really enjoy watching him play, and I've got to say, I do feel sorry for those of you who played in the Karoi Cup knockout on the weekend, because one team had Latrell Mitchell, Joel Thompson, and Ben Barber all in the same team, coming up against guys who would have worked 9 to 5 all week, and then you're coming up to face them in your defensive line. And
I would have loved it.
Oh, it would have been great. And then Adokar was on one of the other teams playing on the wing. George Rose was there as well. And it was Cody all shown Walker live on, Cody Walker. It was all shown live on KO, and you can go back and watch the replays.
Will Kennedy played with his dad and uncle in the same team.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's freaking brilliant, eh? Like, I didn't read enough into it, but I do hope they didn't take the position of someone else. I do hope it was like kind of a one-off game here and there for their region or club, but... that was brilliant to see this. Yeah, so mine's Adokar. Bit selfish on Tino being selected for the Australian squad because he was meant to be the guest speaker at our sport awards night. But that's it. I think we'll wrap it up there. It's been a solid 3 years. We've got to experience some really cool things, going to some NRL press conferences, being able to interview some awesome players and officials, journalists, getting to bring some other people on board, like my brother, Benny Taylor, Rugby League Digest, Chasing Ruse, all these people that we've met through Rugby League social media and all that sort of stuff. I want to thank you boys for jumping in this stupid idea that I had like 3 years ago. And I don't know, times have changed and it's just become a bit hard to keep doing it. So
yeah, cheers to Adam though, because he showed me how to edit. I just never did it, and he did it most weeks.
That's the thing you picked up on.
I love you for it, because after most pods, I went to bed after, you know, royally pissing off Adam and Nick most weeks. And Adam's had to sit there and listen through my bullshit to edit the bastard.
Yeah, it's always good times.
You're a fucking legend.
Oh, no, it's a big congratulations to you two boys. Like, you've done well. I've just come in and just ride off your coattails, really, and just criticize everything you say. So, from what you have achieved in the last 3 years, you have done a bloody good job for a teacher, and I still don't know what Jared does.
No one knows what Jared does. And it's funny, like, Walt comes in and becomes the most popular host within like 10 shows, and he knows what we didn't even do bloody Nick's picks. We all lost our bets on the grand final. So
that means finished first, actually.
Jared finishes on a girl $0. As did I, because I spent it all in the final bet, and Wall ends up on $800, so he's $700 up on our starting total.
So he's taking some beer, taking the boys out for a beer this weekend, I hear.
With his Monopoly money.
Nah.
But the biggest thanks goes to you guys, the listeners. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for Hop Nation, Manscaped, whatever other sponsors we bloody had at some point. There is a chance that 6EN will be back next season in a different format. We'll keep you guys posted on that if that takes off. We may do a World Cup episode at some point, whether it's a wrap-up of the World Cup or...
That means you've got to wake up and watch the World Cup.
Or something along those lines. Keep an eye out, but 6EN in its current format is done and dusted. So thank you very much. Anything from you boys? Signing off.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to 6EN. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the 6EN website. All links via the show's bio.